Hello and welcome to episode 152 of Tea or Books. I'm Rachel.
I'm Simon.
And today we are going to be starting off with looking at, do we prefer novels depicting women's domestic lives versus women's professional lives? Followed by looking at two novels about, well, one's about a professor, one's about a teacher, Men in Education. The Professor's House by Willa Cather and The Things We Never Say by Elizabeth Strout. Interestingly, two books by women with male protagonists.
That's true, actually. Yeah, good point.
But first of all, Simon, how are you? What have you been up to? You've been overseas since we last recorded.
I have. It feels like such a long time ago now, but I did go to Canada, specifically to Calgary, Banff and Vancouver, all over vaguely west, I guess. There were definite highlights. There were some lowlights, but I'll stick with the highlights. I loved seeing Banff. I love seeing friend of the pod, Claire. Yeah. We had lunch in Vancouver. She met my brother.
Lovely Claire.
And we decided to only take cabin luggage. We didn't have any hold luggage.
Okay.
So, even though I was there for 2 weeks and Colin was there for like a month. Mm-hmm. But I decided, because of that, I would only buy 5 books and I bought 16 books. So,
how did you get them home?
Well, I threw away some jeans. It's like I can get jeans back in the UK. They were on their, wait for it, last legs. But I was only buying books that I couldn't get easily in the UK and almost entirely Canadian authors. And I was very blessed by the bookshops that had separate shelves for Canadian authors. So yeah, I got some that I was particularly looking for and lots of serendipitous finds. I think my favorite of I've read quite a few of them already. I really liked Ordinary Wonder Tales by Emily Urquhart, which are like memoir essays comparing experiences from her life with folklore. And she's got a PhD in folklore.
Wow.
And absolutely fascinating. Her mum, Jane Urquhart, is also a well-known Canadian novelist. I bought one of her books, but I've not read that yet. So yeah, I really recommend that. You can see a full review of that on my blog. And it was a Canadian small press as well. So I think probably very easy to get in Canada, maybe not so easy to get elsewhere.
Well, you know, I think when you are going somewhere and you're wanting to collect books you can't get elsewhere, I think you're justified in going beyond your limit.
I think so.
Yeah.
Colin was like, none of this is true. Like I kept saying, I'm not going to buy any more books now. And he'd be like, I think you think that's true, but I know it's not. I was like, Colin knows me better than I know myself.
Yeah. Okay. But you know, I can justify to the fact that Canadian novels are hard to find in the UK. American novels, no, but Canadian for sure. Same with Australia.
Yeah, so, it's true.
Yeah. So, uncharacteristically, I am supporting your acceptance.
Yeah. My goodness. Yeah, I need to take advantage of this. Well, I don't know how I can't get any more right now. I'm no longer there. But yeah, all the ones, I think I read 5 or 6 of those 16 so far, and they've all been really good. One bookshop I went into and I just said, I want to read Canadian novels about Canadian life that I can't get in the UK. And it was, and the bookseller just took me around and just piled things into my hands, and I bought quite a few of them. So thank you to the lovely booksellers in Pages Books in Kensington, Calgary.
Sounds lovely.
Also, there's a cat there, so that was a good bookshop.
Oh. Well, I bet they loved you when you came in.
I know, it's a fun thing to be asked, isn't it? And they didn't really ask anything about my taste. So like, I don't know what they were basing these recommendations on particularly, but the one I have read was called Prairie Edge by Connor Kerr, which is set in Alberta. It's not in Calgary, but set in Edmonton, about some Métis people who release bison into downtown Alberta as a sort of protest. Sorry, downtown Edmonton. And I really enjoyed that. It was very good.
Sounds fascinating. Well, I'm very glad. Well done.
Thank you. What are you reading at the moment?
I'm on week 3 of summer holidays. So I've had lots of time to read, and as I was just telling you, I've had this pile of guilt books on my desk at work for months, where colleagues keep giving me books to read, and I'm like, oh great, yeah, thanks, and just haven't had time to read them. So I felt like I really had to get through all of these. I cleared my desk at the end of the school year, and I was like, right, you have somehow managed to amass a pile of 10 books that you need to read as possible. So I've read a lot of contemporary stuff. The best of the bunch, I would say, was probably what was that book that I told you about just now, whose name I can't remember?
Oh, the one we're doing next time, when the Cranes Fly South.
When the Cranes Fly South, which is a Swedish novel, and it's about an old man who's in his late 80s. He's living alone. His wife has got dementia and she's had to go into a home, and it's his son wants to take his dog away from him and says he can't be responsible for it anymore. And you kind of get this first person perspective really of what it's like to be an older person and to gradually have your agency removed. And it sounds incredibly depressing. It's not. It's just very beautiful and profound in that way that I find Scandinavian novels often are, very really connected to the landscape as well, which I really enjoyed. And I just thought to myself, you know, I don't think I've actually read a book from the perspective of somebody like at the end of their life, you know, in terms of not necessarily like I have with people who've got terminal illness and stuff, but not somebody who's 90 and knows that at some point they're going to die fairly soon, though they're not ill or anything. And yeah,
I guess Gilead is the other example.
Yes. No, that's a good no, but he does have his heart illness, doesn't he? So he knows he
that's true. Yeah, triggered. Yes.
Yeah. Whereas, and I just found it very, very beautiful. I really enjoyed the reading experience, and I was kind of wishing that I'd read it before and hadn't left it on my desk for 6 months. And I also just read The Bee Sting by Paul Murray. Yes, thank you. Which has been on my desk at work for a year. Everybody, terrible. My desk is chaos. My home is very tidy, as you can attest to, Simon, having been. But my work desk is like just chaos. And the fact that this book was on my desk for a year under a pile of other things, this says everything. And I didn't read it last summer because I thought, oh, it's too long and I don't know if I'm going to like this. But I could not put it down. Absolutely brilliant. Mm. So clever. Hated the ending because I didn't want the ending to be the ending. And had a very good discussion with a friend about that the other day. He was like, well, maybe we can interpret differently. I said, we can't interpret it differently. Look at the beginning. And it's, yeah, absolutely brilliant. An Irish family saga. Really interesting and each chapter is told from the perspective of a different character, and the writing style is very different for each character to reflect the way that they think and interact with the world, which I thought was incredibly clever. And being able to get into the head of teenage boy, teenage girl, adult woman, adult man, elderly people, etc. I just thought it was brilliant. I absolutely loved it.
Great. I gave it to my best friend a while ago, but I haven't read it. I just asked her husband what books he thought she might like. So that was,
I think you'd like it, actually.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll borrow it back from her.
Yeah. But it's one of those books that you look at and you think, 600 pages, have I got the patience, stamina, etc.
Yeah.
But it's, I was sitting there and comfortably reading 150 pages in one go. Like, you literally can't put it down.
Okay. Yeah. Well, speaking of doorstoppers, on the question and answer episode, thanks so much, mm-hmm. everyone who sent those in again. I mentioned that I'd never read Middlemarch, and someone, I think it was Brian, put in the comments like he also never has, and he challenged me to read it this year with, and he would too. So I think that's my goal. My only reading goal for 2026 is to actually read Middlemarch. So
I've read it several times, and because I had to for various educational reasons, and I thoroughly enjoy it.
Okay, maybe we'll do an episode in Middlemarch later in the year to make me actually read it.
Maybe I'll read it again as well, Simon.
Okay. Watch this space. Yeah. It did, after all, become voted the best novel of all time or whatever recently. And in fact, we can come into this later, but it was mentioned in an episode on Take Four Books on Radio 4 by Elizabeth Strout as one of the inspirations for Things We Never Say. So
there we are. Yeah. Though I do take great umbrage at that list that said Middlemarch was the best novel because Emma was behind. But quite frankly, how you could vote Middlemarch better than Emma, I don't know.
No, impossible. So yeah, thank you, Lindy, for suggesting this topic for the first half of Do We Prefer Reading About Women's Domestic Lives or Their Professional Lives. Well, let's start with interesting professions we've read about, maybe.
Well, one of my all-time favorite middlebrow novels is High Wages by Dorothy Whipple. And the reason why I love that book so much is because it's all about a woman who has her own dress shop. And you see the development because it's set in the kind of late Edwardian period going into the 20s, I think. You see the development of the initials. She works in the sort of haberdashers and people coming in to buy the fabric and the trimming to make up their own dresses. And then she starts to see the trend for ready-made becoming much more popular. And then she branches out and eventually creates her own dress shop where she's going out on all of these trips to source clothes and things. And the enjoyment and pleasure and pride and sense of achievement she gets, not only in running her own successful business, but also that, I suppose, creative fulfillment in the fashion industry and that enjoyment of making people look good in the clothes that they wear. I just thought it was brilliant. And I loved the fact that it was one of the first books I've ever read, actually, that showed a woman's life with the focus being on her career and her personal interests rather than on the desire to get married or having a romantic relationship.
Yeah, I was thinking about different jobs that I read about, and that one came up to mind as well. And I could think quite a few that are in shops. So it's like the flower shop is sort of from home, In the Lark by E. Nesbitt. There's Hat Shop and Economy Must Be Our Watchword by Joyce Dennis, which I love. The second two books in the L-Shaped Room trilogy, there's I think it's an antique shop. I've read those books so many times and I can't remember. But and I thought, yeah, the shop is an interesting sort of compromise between these places because whilst it obviously is a professional environment, there's something also, I guess, curiously domestic, particularly about a shop that has furniture or fabric or clothing as a main thing. So those are such domestic objects, but it's also a place where they're not holed away in an office somewhere. There are, you know, it gives a good opportunity for different characters to arrive and all those sorts of things. I was thinking Pindacy Peep Show as well. That's got lots in a shop, hasn't it? Yeah. So shop came up a lot, and I was trying to think of the more unusual ones and whether I enjoy those. And I've recently read a really interesting and really good book called The Friend in Need by Elizabeth Coxhead, which was published, I think, in the 50s or maybe 60s, where the main character is a social worker. Yeah. And that's something I've never read a novel about before. And I went in slightly nervously because I thought, goodness knows what social work was like in that period. And I'm sure that her approach involved things that would be anathema to social workers today. But I actually thought it had a lot of respect for the working class children characters in it, which I was worried there would not be, and respect for quite a lot of their parents as well, or other guardians. And also, by the way, one of the most sort of adorable romance storylines that I've come across in quite a long time between Elizabeth, no, that's the author, I can't remember the character's name, but this very sort of upper middle class social worker with a lower middle slash working class man that who thinks he can't possibly be good enough for her, and she thinks he's lovely, and it's all very sweet. So really recommend that. I'm hoping, I've recommended it to the British Library to come out in the series, so fingers crossed. But I thought, yeah, that's such an interesting profession to write about, because again, it gives you an opportunity to introduce lots of secondary or temporary characters and lots of scenarios that are very people based in a way that, you know, a data entry job or something wouldn't be. Yes. but also just a fascinating insight into presumably well-informed version of what that particular job was like 70 plus years ago.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most interesting things about certainly reading novels that aren't set now that are based on people's professions, because you get to see the reality of how these sorts of jobs change over time, how attitudes towards people change over time as well. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I love Fresh from the Country by Miss Reed, which is set in a primary school, the teacher and the young teacher coming into this job for the first time. And so much of it is recognisable, but then you've also got the reality that it's perfectly normal for her to have a class of 50 students. And it's like, oh, okay, when you think that like teaching is really hard work and isn't it terrible, and how, and people say, oh, you know, it wasn't like this when we were at school. It's like, actually it was worse. So it gives you that bit of perspective really, and helps you to understand how professions change and grow over time. But that's a wonderful depiction of working life. And as Miss Reed, the author, was a teacher herself, it's also very well informed. I'm wondering, with your book about social work, how much, like, how she found out about the profession. Was she a social worker herself? Did she do research, or do you know, does it say?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a really obscure book. It was one that I just bought in Hay on Wye, sort of because it looked interesting. And there is a small blurb about her, but I don't remember it saying that she has first-hand experience. Yeah, I don't know, but it's only, I mean, to me, it felt authentic, but what do I know? I think that can be the problem potentially with this, with the sort of job focused book, is if the author doesn't know anything about it, then either it reads as inauthentic to people who do know about it, or it ends up being like an exercise in dumping research, which, I mean, I know we covered it and I thought it was okay, but Lessons in Chemistry, that everyone raved about so much, which I didn't love as much as other people did feel very like, here is a TV chef, here is a scientist, here are my, you know, here's my research about that, sort of, but also doesn't, you know, doesn't relate on the page like either of those professions would actually be. And sometimes it can just be a bit self-consciously quirky. So it is sort of a fine line between, here is an unusual, I love reading about unusual professions, but I don't want it to feel like sort of a half-hearted biography or something that clearly they don't have the first idea about what that job actually is like.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think for me as well, I really like books that explore the challenges of professional life. And I'm not necessarily bothered about, you know, understanding the ins and outs of what somebody does for their jobs, but one of the reasons why I love Barbara Pym's novels so much is that so many of the characters in there work in these really kind of dead end secretarial office jobs that they hate, and mm-hmm. you see all of the office politics behind the scenes, and it's not about the work that they're doing, it's about the environment of the office, and then also that exploration of what it's like to be a working woman who lives alone, you know, yes, because most of her heroines, you know, they're not married, they don't have children. And the juggling of going to work, then having to get your food on the way home. And it's still, even though those books were written in the kind of mid-century, it's still a very recognisable portrait of the pressures of working life and how much crap you have to put up with from colleagues and also interesting from a feminist perspective to look at the discrepancy in the roles in those novels. You know, all of the women are secretaries, all the positions of responsibility are dominated by men, and the kinds of inappropriate comments or inappropriate expectations of the women put on them by the men. You know, oh, can you go out and get my lunch for me? Can you go out and pick up my dry cleaning? Oh, can you go and sort this out for me? It's like, she's not your personal assistant, she's just a secretary in the office. But the expectation is that the women are there, no matter what their job is, to service the men, essentially. So I find all of that very interesting. And there's lots of mid-century novels that explore that kind of thing. I mean, there's a little bit of it in Muriel Spark, and I think as well, oh God, it's gone out of my head. The novel that we read, she retires and then has the diary and...
Five-year sentence, Bernice Rubens.
5-year sentence, and again, that's almost Pym-esque situation. I mean, I thought it was going to be like a Barbara Pym, and then obviously went in a very...
Yes.
but it's that sort of environment I find very interesting, and I like probably reading more novels, mid-century novels set in those kinds of professional environments than I do domestic environments, because the domestic environment is the norm, I suppose, rather than something that, and I don't feel like, certainly most of the mid-century novels I read and have read are middle to upper class settings, so you're getting the same background of servant problems or, you know, not having to do the housework yourself and those kinds of issues that, you know, you tend to feel a little bit outdated.
Yeah, I mean, it's I guess it's easier somehow to think of the books that do have professions in, because mm-hmm. there's such an amorphous mass of particularly, yeah, as you say, early, mid-20th century or indeed earlier books where, you know, the Ebb Delafields or Ivor Contal-Burnett or Elizabeth Taylor or all these other people where it's sort of taken for granted. I know there will be exceptions amongst their output, but broadly, those characters are not going to have to work for a private income. Or rather, they already have an independent income. And as you say, that covers a huge array of types of book. And yet, whilst you can have infinite variety within a domestic life, it's you're not going to a novel thinking, oh, interesting, this novel's about a housewife or, you know, an upper middle class woman who didn't have to work or something. It's more just, that's the background we've taken as read, what happens next? Yeah. So I do love that sort of novel, but it feels a bit harder to categorize it because it feels sort of like the default from the beginning of the time the novel was written up until about 1950 or something.
So, yeah.
Interesting sort of, not counterpoint, but like interesting comparison to what you've been saying about how women are often the more lowly characters in an office or something in these novels, is how surprisingly early women were GPs and some interesting novels there, like Dangerous Ages by Rose McCauley has a GP. I'm sure Helen Ashton, I know she wrote about male doctors. Did she write about female doctors as well? I can't remember. But I've read a handful at least of those novels, and it always comes as a sort of very pleasant surprise that women were able to be doctors long before they were welcomed into many other professions, and interesting to read. From that perspective.
Yes, and I mean, there's a lot of 50s and 60s novels in particular, slightly trashy ones that are told through, explore nurse novels, aren't they, with women as nurses in that kind of medical setting. But I don't think I've read or seen one about a female doctor, but I'm sure they must exist.
Oh, well, you must read Dangerous Ages then. It's very...
Okay, I will.
And then there's Monica Dickens, very funny. I guess they're not novels. They are sort of fictionalized memoirs or something where she becomes a cook and then becomes a nurse and then becomes a journalist in my, is it called? One Pair of Hands, One Pair of Feet and My Tent to Make the Tea.
Yes.
Which I don't think she's playing for verisimilitude. It's definitely exaggerated, but they are great fun.
And there's plenty of novels with women as artists and practices and so on, which are all
those do seem to be the go-to, don't they? I guess they are the things that were acceptable for genteel women.
Yes.
Maybe not actress, but like artist and writer, and we're acceptable professions.
Yes. You know, Illyrian Spring, she's an artist, which one of my favourite books, and who can forget our favourite Catherine Carter.
Of course, yes.
So yeah, there's lots. I think it's interesting as well. One of the reasons why I'm just thinking of South Riding by Winifred Holtby, which I know is not your favourite. That's a wonderful book at looking at a variety of women in professions and social professions in particular. You've got a head teacher, you've got politicians, you've got councillors, etc., justice of the peace, and so on. So women who are in positions of political power, which in the 1930s, they were really, this has been the culmination of a lot of work to get themselves into those positions. And it's really interesting to see the reality of what that was like.
Interesting is one word for that novel, yes. Boring is another one, but yeah.
It's a wonderful tapestry of modern life. And I don't know why you don't love it.
So tedious. Speaking of acting, I'm currently reading Carol by Patricia Highsmith.
Oh,
have you read that?
I have, yes.
Yeah. In which, in fact, it has sort of both. It has one woman who is who doesn't need to work, and the other one who is originally a shop assistant, and that's how the working class and the upper class women meet. But I think more interesting from the career point of view is that she while she's not working in a shop, is a theatre designer. And I thought, you know, it doesn't play a huge role in the novel, but I was really interested in the little snippets we got about her making the models as prototypes of the set, and then the feedback from the director, and also all things that I'm sure you know in your theatrical world now. But yeah. I don't know if it's done the same way. I imagine more computers are involved than used to be. But yeah, I enjoyed those details. I thought, it sort of made the novel feel a little less stereotypical of like working class shop girl meets upper class woman in furs sort of vibe. But and yeah, gave more nuance. To be honest, I'm finding the novel a bit of a drag. I did really enjoy the first sort of half, and I've just find that there's very little sort of momentum to it now. But did you like it?
I did. But I think I'd watch the film first. So maybe.
Oh, I've not seen it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I probably enjoyed the film more than the book. And I think because I read the book after the film, I maybe filled in some stuff from what I'd seen. So I don't know. I'm not reliable on that one. It's been a long time.
Well, my book group is doing it tomorrow, so I'll discuss it more then, although slim pickings based on who is not watching the football match.
Yeah, I mean, what are you thinking? I'll certainly be watching it.
Will you? under no circumstances would I watch that or any other football match. because you don't know when we're recording, tomorrow is the semi-final of the World Cup.
Semi-final of the World Cup for England. So yeah, England versus Argentina. We'll see how we get on.
I hope never to find out.
The thing is, where I live, I'm surrounded by so many pubs. I don't even need to watch. I can just hear from the shouting what's happening.
Funny. Well, shall we make our decision? I know we've talked more about jobs than domestic, yes. But I think that is because they are a little more distinct, perhaps. But, yes. Women's domestic lives or women's professional lives? What are you going to go for?
I think as a professional woman myself, I enjoy reading about women's professional lives through time.
Yeah, I think it would draw me like the Elizabeth Coxhead social work novel. I think particularly if it's an unusual profession, I'd be like, oh, I would like to find out more about that or see how the author's treated that. So I'm going to be with you. Yeah. Professional lives. Do let us know any recommendations for unusual women's professions in novels. Let us know at tyourbooks@gmail.com. We'd love the suggestions. Shannon has a question for the middle section, which is, what were the first adult books you read, and how do you think those first reads influence the books you prefer now?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm going to have to think about that because I'm not sure.
I can start if you like. Yeah. I think the first adult book I read was 1984. When I was maybe 13. And that was around the same time that I really got into Agatha Christie. So I read a lot of those. Like a lot of people, I think, have that as their jumping off point. But I don't know why 1984. It was in our school library. Someone must have mentioned it. And I mean, I still love 1984 and I still love Agatha Christie. But I think, how did it influence what I read now? I think... 1984 gave me an appreciation for excellent writing that is not super showy. And Agatha Christie gave me an appreciation for compelling plots, I suppose. So I think probably it was more than adult novels that I read when I was maybe a couple years older than that, that starts really set me off in a particular direction. But I think maybe, yeah, it gave me an appreciation for simplicity in writing, and it hopefully stopped me being a snob about authors like Agatha Christie, because I'm like, I can appreciate fine writing, but I can also appreciate the genius it takes to plot as well as she does.
Wow. I can't actually remember the first books I was given. I feel like it was probably Daphne du Maurier. And I remember my mum buying me Rebecca and My Cousin Rachel, and I really loved those. And then she got me onto Jane Austen from there, but I did struggle with Jane Austen at first. I think I started reading Jane Austen when I was about 13, and I think I found the language a bit too much. Mm. So I didn't come back to them for another couple of years. But I was a voracious reader of all sorts, but I think but when I went to secondary school, I think that my mum was trying to kind of push me away from my Babysitter's Club stuff, my preference. You did Sweet Valley High, didn't you? I was a
babysitter. That's right. Yeah.
And moving me on to more adult stuff. But I think it's, yeah, I remember vividly reading Rebecca and My Cousin Rachel. I must have been about 12, and really loving those. And then it was very much going straight from there on to Austen and the Brontes. I read Jane Eyre quite young as well, probably 13. Loved that, absolutely loved it. So yeah, big old classics. And I think for me, it set a kind of precedent for me that I could read anything I wanted and I wasn't limited by things having to be a certain length or appropriateness for me. My mum was very liberal. I just used to go, I wouldn't really have any books at home, so I would just go to the library and I'd be allowed to choose whatever I wanted. So and I had a very good English teacher as well at that age who gave me lots of things to read. So I think it's, yeah, it definitely for me made me challenge myself and read. My main diet at that age and really up until my mid-20s was a lot of it was classics. And that's interesting, I think, because as being good literature.
Yeah, I mean, it's not adult literature, but what you said there, it reminds me, I'm so, so grateful that my parents let me read whatever I want. Because you could get parents who think, why is this boy reading like Goosebumps and Point Horror and Sweet Valley and all this like trashy nonsense, yeah, and you should read something improving. But I think my parents are just like, he's loving reading, that's great, let him, he'll get out of his system and he'll read good books eventually. So, and it worked out. Yeah.
I mean, all reading is good reading. That's what I always say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm sure lots of parents would love that. Kids be reading anything. So, yeah, thanks, Shannon. If you've got a question, we've sort of exhausted all our other questions now in the big Q&A episode. Normally I've got a bit of a backlog. So any questions for the middle section, do let us know, teyourbooks@gmail.com. Yeah. So on to two novels, The Professor's House by Willa Cather and The Things We Never Say by Elizabeth Strout. Any preference for which you introduce us to?
I just finished The Professor's House this morning, so that's freshest in my mind.
Great. Do you want to kick us off then with that?
Okay, so The Professor's House by Willa Cather is a novel about Godfrey St. Peter, whose name is actually hilariously Napoleon. And he is a professor in a Midwestern town on Lake Michigan. Is that where they live?
Maybe.
And in the, do you know, I didn't even really get a sense of when it was. Was it the 20s or 30s?
20s. Well, that's a good question. 25 it was published, yeah.
Yeah, so it's after World War One anyway, but not World War Two yet. And he's a professor of history, and he, at the beginning of the novel,